Welcome to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And what is Idle Red Hands Weekly? It is the tendency to speak about topics unrelated to the main topic of discussion. While most people engage in it from time to time, constant and extreme tendency may indicate an underlying mental health condition, particularly schizophrenia.
Not that comforting.
So this is in way of an apology for last week's episode.
While tangential, they were all related. I mean, that's what tangents are. Tangents are supposed to pop up from nowhere. They break off from the main conversation. And we brought it back.
We did. Yeah, I think we got it back. Kind of all over the place. A little bit amateur art criticism. Some psychology. But we did get back to tabletop. So we'll stick more to tabletop this week for all those listeners that are getting confused by what is this about exactly?
So speaking of tabletop, what'd you get up to?
Not much. This week I did some considering. So okay. So my daughter's going to be visiting from the US. Her and her boyfriend are coming. They don't have any tabletop experience, and it's been tempting to try to introduce something to them. And so I've got both the starter set and then the essentials kit for 5e. And so I was thinking about running, depending on like what they're really up for, if they want to make characters, if they just want to play pre-gen, thinking about running something for them to see what they thought of the whole experience. Because I'm sure they're seeing a lot of Critical Role and things on the internet and going, what is going on? And so it might be an interesting experiment, you know, people with no experience and probably not a lot of interest in fantasy to do that. Because I think they're much more anime. I mean, there is a lot of fantasy in anime, but they're anime fans. So it'll be interesting to see their take. And they're like, this is no fun. Or, wow, this is really fun to express myself or have the imagination of it. I'm curious what their experience will be.
Yeah. I mean, D&D is, for better or worse, the gateway to the hobby for most people. Mm. Doesn't have to be. So not to throw a wrench in your plans, I would say, ask them what genre they're most interested in.
Yes.
And run a game that's closest to that. Mm-hmm. And since, of course, I'm thinking about it a lot, is it like horror? Hey, run the Alien RPG because it's a fresh batch of players who haven't gone through it. Or use Fate Accelerated and just kind of, I mean, it's a bit more work intensive, but you could almost make something up on the fly using that system that kind of is about a genre they're interested in. Mm. Or, I mean, a number of people have said, when they introduce games to people, those people specifically say, I want to play D&D, not knowing what D&D is, but because D&D is a lingua franca. I mean, you could cheat and say, okay, we're going to play this game that's like D&D, and they won't know the difference. Right, that's a little duplicitous. Or you say, okay, yeah, D&D, and tailor the game to meet their expectations. Mm. So instead of like counting squares, just do stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And just getting bogged down in combat and stuff. So I'm curious what their tolerances are and everything. So that brings me to a possible future topic. And I think we've touched on this at various times before, but what is the best intro to tabletop? Like with zero knowledge of it, the default, because it's, you know, like you're saying, it is the gateway. It's the most visible. It's the biggest, biggest kid on the block.
Only kid on the block. Only sometimes seems like it.
So D&D 5e as a starter, or because they have two starter sets now.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, one where you have pre-gens and one where you actually can roll characters from kind of a limited, you know, basically what they give you in the free PDF.
Right. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, those races, those classes. So nothing crazy advanced, just real bare bones. So what would you recommend? I mean, you've already kind of touched on that, you know, so figure out their genre, what they're interested in. But as far as systems, so like would Powered by the Apocalypse be a difficult first game? Or do you think that, depending on their taste?
Yeah. Sure. System aside, I ran a Dungeon World game for a pair of my friends who, like your daughter, had no tabletop RPG experience. Went pretty well, mostly because sounds like a humble brag, I could probably run Dungeon World in my sleep because it's pretty easy to run once you get used to it. I found the language of moves a lot easier for them to understand than more mechanical stuff, where it says when you attack, like it says right there on the sheet, when you fire a ranged weapon or when you attack someone in combat or when you do this. And the conversational language of the moves was easier for them to understand. And I also didn't say, here's the move sheet. I only gave them as much information as they needed, because sometimes it's not a giant Pathfinder rule book that you're putting in front of someone, but sometimes even just handing someone a full on 8.5 by 11 sheet of text, they kind of balk and go, I don't know. So it's like, no, don't worry about it. Just tell me what you want your character to do. I found I say the move a couple times and then I kind of give them the sheet and I say, we're doing this. And then they kind of realize that each kind of discrete paragraph is a separate thing to do and they don't have to memorize all of it. That being said, Powered by the Apocalypse, there's no kind of generic settingless game.
Right.
And it's that the moves are real dependent on setting. So it's not like Fate, where you could just kind of pull something out of your pocket and adapt to something that people want to play right then and there. Mm. So that's kind of a downside of the Powered by the Apocalypse.
Right. Yeah, so I was kind of torn between 5e and Dungeon World. I thought for fantasy, yeah, both of those I think would be a nice taste. And if you just wanted theater of the mind and just total imagination, I thought Dungeon World would be fun.
If they have experience with video games and other kind of like, you know, video RPGs, then Dungeons and Dragons might probably be fine because they're used to mechanics, if not on the surface, then, you know, kind of things happening, I guess mechanically. And then you can say, okay, well, now instead of a computer randomizing it, we're just rolling a die to see what happens.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. So we will see. I'll report back, and maybe I can't even lure them into it anyhow. They've been,
maybe not. They did play Netrunner when we were here. So,
right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So that they're open to tabletop experiences. So how about you this week?
I ran the one shot of the Chariot of the Gods Alien RPG Cinematic Starter. And I thought it went pretty well. Nice. I had five players, one of which, who miraculously somehow, had never seen an Alien movie.
That's so amazing.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty amazing, where I'm just like, I started my spiel about, okay, this is the Alien, we all know what's going to happen, and I'm like, has everyone seen a movie? And it's like, I haven't. I'm like, okay, so you kind of don't know what's going to happen. All right, this is a little bit weird. But I thought it went well. Mm-hmm. We were talking before about how to compress that scenario into a four-ish hour slot.
Right.
And what I did is I kind of skipped a lot of events in Act 1. Spoilers, because I don't know how to say the starting position without not spoiling stuff. Rather than leaving them on the Montero to kind of figure out what was going on and then decide to go into the Kronos, I set up the situation and said, okay, you've awoken from hypersleep, you're in the wrong place, there's a ship outside, Mother has directed you with these three directives that you have to go explore it, rescue the crew, and secure samples. Who is in the umbilical connected to the Kronos ready to go explore?
Oh, that's good.
And kind of made it clear that, like, you're going to lose your shares if you don't go and do these three things. Go onto the ship. I mean, I suppose I could have even started the game by saying the airlock to the Kronos opens, and this is what you see. I'm real in favor of a cold start like that, with it being perfectly clear that you're not meant to go back.
Right.
It still felt tight, and there was not a lot of exploration of the Kronos. So much so that I could actually run a second game after the event of this first one.
Nice. Yeah, so there's a lot of unknown territory on the ship. Yeah. Nice.
And the scenario gives you, what, two, three-ish groups of characters, where I have a whole other group of characters that kind of don't know what's going on and I could introduce to the scenario.
Nice. Yeah, I think that would be interesting, because we've already, you know, we've had that the first session and then you ran this session, and I think that's kind of unexplored territory. That might be a really interesting way to come at this same setting from a totally different perspective and see how people react, because a crew is a crew. There's kind of like the similar roles and the similar types, so I think people could be comfortable starting with a crew of any ship.
Yeah, a crew of any ship, yeah. And also, I think the fate of some of the PCs from this first game I ran are unknown. I mean, shaky, but unknown. And there might still be people alive on the ship, because if you're just exploring a completely abandoned ship, it would not be as interesting as the human element that's then included, because, I mean, you can't really interact with an alien other than to shoot it or run away.
Right.
But having people to interact with makes that interesting. And also, there's a way for them to still escape based on how I introduce it, which if you just kind of go, no, there's no way out, it's not that fun, maybe. Right. But,
so did you have a covert synthetic in your
spoilers? But I did not.
Oh, interesting. Yeah,
I did not. Yeah. And there was still enough kind of suspicion going on. Like, I think the person playing the captain passed me a note and said, I don't trust what's going on with this whole corporate angle thing.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, yeah, okay. So they didn't. Well, actually, they kind of did. they kind of did turn on each other a little bit, but I made it very clear that, okay, if you do that, you kind of lose your character.
Right. Oh, that's
There was also one part that I thought was particularly good role playing, where they went to go and fix the reactor, like we did in our game.
Right.
And I said, okay, that's fine. You can absolutely do that. You were looking at a shift of work, and a shift of work is 5 to 10 hours of game time. So if you do this, your character is pretty much out for the rest of the scenario. So I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just saying if you don't want to kind of lose your character, don't do this. And the player looked and said, well, my character would do this, but I would prefer if someone else gave me a reason not to. And then the captain said, okay, well, I'm going to order you to come back up to the bridge and help with this thing. Oh, so cool. I thought that was really good. Like, me, the GM, making clear what's going to happen on this player's course of action.
Right.
The player is saying, my character would do this, but I kind of don't want to. And another player then saying, okay, well then here's the in-game reason for your character to come back with the rest of the group and continue playing the game.
Mm. Well, that's good. Yeah. How did they do with the Year Zero system? Did they like the dice pool?
They did. Mm-hmm. There was a bit of confusion that was partially my fault. Mm-hmm. So you have your base dice, your stress dice, and then you need regular D6s because sometimes you've got to roll on that D6 chart or whatever. Right. I made the mistake of making both my base dice and the regular D6s black.
Ah.
And they looked very similar. Mm-hmm. So there were a couple rolls where the wrong die got mixed in.
I see.
Or I would say like, okay, now I'm going to roll some regular dice and would get handed the wrong dice or like, okay, roll this. So
I see.
The system was great. I mm-hmm. should have made all of the dice different colors. So I could just easily say it's 10 of those black dice, two of those yellow or red dice because I used all of them. Mm-hmm. And then these blue dice are for something else, for example.
Right. So, yeah, I think that, yeah, that would have helped. Yeah, I can understand that getting mixed in and rolling on a table with blank sides.
Yeah, blanks. All these blanks are like, oh, what's going on? It took a couple rolls for the panic roll.
Mm-hmm.
But it's... I kind of worded it weird where like normally if you're just rolling dice and looking for the symbol, saying roll an actual die and then add this number to it can be a bit jarring at first.
Yeah, because I think everything, stats represent number of dice, stress represent number of dice, and then you're like, but now roll a die and add the number. Yeah, that stress value, I think, is our stress level.
The other thing that I really liked, toot my own horn, I made item cards. They were just scrawled on paper because I didn't really have enough time, but I think it was really evocative to, at the beginning of the game, have the captain actually hand these things out to kind of, and it was pretty clear who's getting weapons, who's getting nothing, you know, and that was kind of, that was interesting. And I liked that physical nature of just reinforcing, nope, not giving the corporate person anything, you know, because I don't trust you.
Yeah, that detail in the adventure that the captain assigns the remaining, that works well in those scenarios, because you're going to be encountering gear and equipment and picking it up, you have the card. Oh, it doesn't work anymore. I'm out of ammo, discarding it. Yep, I think, so you know what you're dealing with. Because there wasn't a lot of interacting with carrying stuff, but we never dealt with encumbrance at all. But I think that would be an issue if you're kind of hoarding, because I think Cham was carrying.
Yeah. At one point in our game, like Cham was carrying all the weapons.
Right.
And in the game I ran, the characters realized they were kind of running out of air. No one took off their suit, but they found an area that had suits and working, okay, how many air canisters are around and how many can we carry? And there was a part where one of the characters was carrying back like two or three canisters of air to meet with the rest of the group to refill air. And it would have been awesome to have them be like ambushed for us like then. They didn't do it because that seemed kind of mean, but
As far as the experience level of the players, had everyone played some kind of tabletop before, or were they new to it, or only D&D, or what was that?
I didn't ask what system, but I had a mix of players. Some of the players I had played with before at the end of the month sessions. Mm-hmm. Other players said they were kind of familiar, but it had been a while since they played an RPG. But I thought everyone was great. And I think the system, the simplicity of the system, again, really helped with that.
Mm.
Where it's just like, nope, just tell me what you want to do. Let's figure out what skill applies if necessary. And then just roll this bunch of dice and look for this particular symbol. And that means you did okay.
Nice. Anything that didn't work well or anything that was difficult or that you wish you would have like planned for differently?
Sure. I'm not sure how to fix it. But at one point, the presentation of the module kind of hampered me. I do like how it's all the maps and all the rooms and room descriptions first, and then events that you can do or not do depending on what happens. It was tough to flip back and forth between areas of the module, especially when the characters split up into multiple groups. And it had to be, okay, hold on, flip, find the science lab, and then kind of describe the thing. Apart from memorizing the description of every room, I don't know how I would avoid that.
Yes. Yeah, I ran into that same thing as I was like, okay, you guys are going where? Okay, wait. Yep, you're going where? Wait, okay, the door is opening and you see, wait.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone was real good. And I said, okay, hold on. Yeah. But I kind of felt that while not a drag on the game, it was noticeable.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I just had to fudge it because I wasn't finding the room. I just I switched the science room and the med lab and just like, I'm just putting everything
in. It's all in there. Yeah. Yeah.
Because, there wasn't any way to fix that once it had already started. Any big surprises? Anything you were like, wow, that worked better than I thought, or that was a really
big surprise? Yeah. Someone tried to grapple a xenomorph. And here's a great example of either say yes or no, I guess, or roll the dice. Like the player the player and the character didn't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
They said, I'm going to grapple this thing. And the whole table goes, what are you doing? And I say, just to clarify, you're going to drop your shotgun, grapple this thing that took a shotgun blast to the chest and did not die and is now leaking caustic fluid on the floor. Right. And the player said, yes. And I said, okay, well, let's roll the dice and see what happens. Miraculously, they did it.
Wow.
Miraculously, they survived.
Yes.
And miraculously, the thing didn't kill them. So, I mean, I could have said no,
mm-hmm.
but I'm like, okay, let's see what happens. And then they did it. Yeah, so you kind of have to be open to that. Happening.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that was a big surprise.
Yeah, that's great. And it's great that the system handled that. It was it made it fun and
I couldn't find the rules for actually they're in there. Mm-hmm. But I just said, okay, let's do an opposed strength check.
Right.
And then the same player later on shoots something with the grappling gun and tries to pull it towards them. And I'm like, okay, well, let's just make an opposed strength check.
Right.
That one didn't go so well. But, yeah.
Yeah, that was the weird temptation. I think for the Cham character that they had a lot of physical combat and not mm-hmm. a lot of ranged, and so they're I think at one point Chris was like hitting them with the incinerator instead of shooting
Of shooting with the incinerator. And I'll tell you, the incinerator makes short work of the antagonist.
When Cham had to be played as an NPC and I wasn't rolling stress dice, then it's like okay, he's just unstoppable because he never runs out of fuel. There was an update from Free League. The pre-orders of course are closed now for the Alien RPG, and they said they're going to be releasing basically two adventures, two books with the complete set. There's going to be the campaign, mm-hmm. and then there'll be another cinematic adventure. They said kind of similar in size to the Chariot of the Gods.
Okay, cool.
But they did say both of these are going to focus more heavily on space marines or space.
Oh, really? Okay.
What are they called?
The Colonial Marines.
Colonial Marines, yes. Those are more closely on Colonial Marines, which were kind of missing. You know, they're missing from that first adventure. Maybe that's one of the things, because Aliens is probably the most popular of those movies.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Okay. People's expectations are, I'm going to be Hicks. I'm going to be, you know, in there.
Some of the words die off screen.
Right.
Yeah, I was just ranting about this on Twitter. That's interesting. I would probably go the other way, where I think the strength of the game is the cinematic mode and kind of the stress and tension die. So mm-hmm. I'll be curious to see what they do with the Colonial Marines and what kind of adventures we get. But, I mean, maybe we get tired or kind of boring after a long time, but I like the unprepared or kind of in over their head horror scenario thing.
Yeah.
I also noticed on the website and the download section, they have maps of Hadley's Hope.
Yes.
The colony.
Yeah, that was their Gen Con cinematic.
Oh, was it?
Yes.
Okay.
So hopefully they'll release that as a downloadable, as a PDF, because that would be fun, because you're all going to play as colonists. Yeah. And I think—
No kids, please.
Yeah, right. It's all family.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, that is some gruesome stuff. Like, watch the movie again, I'm like, okay, it's implied it happens?
Yes.
I don't want to play that.
Yeah, right. I mean, because, basically they could say, okay, the xenomorphs have hit the daycare and all the parents have lost their kids. What do you do?
Yep. Quit the game. Tapping out. Yep, done. Oh, I guess that was the other thing. I did have two X cards during the game, and I said, okay, there's a horror game. That's going to happen, but if anyone feels uncomfortable with anything, tap either of these cards. Like, brought that up because, hey, I'd be like, xenomorphs, into the daycare. Yep, out, done. Yep, let's tap on that X card.
Nice. So did anybody have any bad reactions, or anybody get a little squeamish and say, oh, really?
No. Maybe partially because I didn't describe stuff enough. Partially because we were playing in a public area. And so it's not great for the atmosphere. And also, the game's supposed to be entertaining. And so people were kind of cracking jokes, not excessively and stuff. But I mean, I think that's a natural reaction to uneasiness and stuff. So it was maybe more lighthearted a little bit than I intended. But I'd rather everyone have a good time than people not.
Yeah. Yeah, I felt the same way too, even though I did a lot to kind of do mood and stuff. The first session was very jokey, and it was fun though, because everybody at the table is so fun. So I think kind of getting into it and getting used to it. But it's nice you were able to pull that off in one session. So to answer that question, it's doable.
It's doable. Yeah, the session lasted, we went overtime, it was about 5.5 hours.
Okay.
Only because people wanted to kind of, we were up to a certain point, people say, oh, we'll want to kind of see what happens.
Mm.
You
played at a gaming bar, basically.
Yeah, kind of like a cafe, yeah.
Right. And was there a crowd there? Were there people going, what are they playing? Anybody notice what you were doing?
There were not. No one noticed what we were doing. There were other people playing board games and stuff like that, but no one came over and like poked their head over. And stuff.
I'm just curious.
Despite my Whalen t-shirt.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that happens kind of at the regular jig meetings. Yeah. People are like just kind of watching the progress of games at different tables. But yeah, so I was just curious because that is a noticeable game. And especially, yeah, you did cards and things, so people would notice what you were playing.
Didn't put up my screen just because there wasn't enough space, but I did kind of like roll a couple things behind my hand, especially, I guess, the Xenomorph AI. Because while it's not real noticeable, I think it takes away from the atmosphere to go, oh, it did this because you rolled a three.
Yes. I don't know how the Alien license is working, what kind of license Free League has, but if they're going to, like, they're going to support Colonial Marines now, but if people, because when we're reviewing just this starter adventure and the system, talking about, wow, an all corporate adventure, cinematic adventure, or, you know, an all colonial colonist or an all space trucker has some interesting, so that they're going to have to support it pretty significantly to get everybody's kind of what they want in there. And I wonder how much the license is going to allow people to develop stuff and actually, you know, them be able to post it or whatever. It's all going to have to be just fan based stuff.
Maybe. I don't know. I was thinking as soon as I saw the Hadley's Hope map, I'm like, oh, it would be cool to be colonist. Kind of grisly. You could also be like, you know, the Colonial Marines. And I'm like, huh, okay, think about that. But I think the resource mechanic in that would be great for Colonial Marines, because if you're like tricked out to the gills with all the stuff that are able to take down the Xenomorphs, then the tension is going to come from knowing you have a finite supply of stuff to do that with.
Yes.
Just like in the movie. And you're watching those sentry guns count down and you're like, ah, crap. Mm-hmm. And you keep rolling those stress dice and you're like, we're running out of ammo. Mm-hmm. What are we going to do? And I think that would be a way to make it interesting, as opposed to like the Death Watch game I ran, where you're kind of like, you're never going to run out and you're just going to be badasses the whole time,
which
is fun in itself, but not action horror.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I think the survival and sci-fi horror does rely on kind of limited resources and I'm out.
Yep.
You know? Yeah. This week, a Kickstarter that I noticed and that I've been an ongoing support of. So Riot Minds, another one of the big Swedish publishers, is doing their Muspelheim adventures. They're setting. So they're doing source books. They've already done the Stormlands. So basically they released, this is all for Trudvang. So Trudvang is basically Swedish D&D. It's like, it's like what the Demons and Dragons, their kind of original version of what happened to D&D in Sweden. Trudvang is the kind of English translation of that. And so they've released the Stormlands, and it's more limited, like the bestiary and the setting is more limited to this world. So it's got its own setting and own world. So more limited to trolls and goblins and dragons. And it doesn't have such a huge sprawling monster manual.
That's everything and therefore kind of boring.
So this new source book collection that they're releasing is the second complete volume. So Stormlands was fulfilled and now publicly released after their Kickstarter. So this is another Kickstarter for the next source books, and it's going to be the realm of the dwarves, so kind of the underworld beneath the land of the humans and the elves, basically. Yeah, their version of the
underdark.
Yeah, but maybe not as dark. Yeah, I don't think there's going to be drow. It's going to be basically a dwarf land.
Well, if it's kind of loosely based on North mythology, then you do have the dark elves, light elves, and dark elves.
Oh, right.
But I mean, I'm not a scholar, and I think dark elves might be kind of conflated with dwarves. I might have gotten that wrong, but they might kind of be, you know, one of those troubles of translation where, are they referring to the same thing or are they separate? Or
whatnot? Yeah. So, I'm curious to see. Yeah, because it's all Norse and some Celtic mythology for this setting. And it's nice. It's all, you know, Paul Bonner art and it's great. So I'm looking forward to it. And so the kind of more deluxe version has a slipcase. So another slipcase with all of their volumes in it. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to...
Who doesn't like a slipcase?
to seeing that. So check that out. We'll put a link in the description. So I've got to put together. We've got to get going here. Source books behind for playing Trudvang. So,
which we're going to do when?
Oh, soon. Soon.
Famous last words. Yeah.
So where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always, at HiveMind, HYVEMYND. I'm currently in the middle of an epic rant about what happened to the Elizabeth Shaw character between Prometheus and Covenant, because that was real shit. You can find me there. Patreon for producing Fate material is Fantastic Fate Resources. I also do the Facebook page Fantastic Fate Resources. Also on the blog, fantasticfateresources.com.
Nice. And I do a weekly single panel gag cartoon, two of those a week actually, and a live stream every Sunday night, North America time. And I was recently informed that my archives on my website are completely down. So the PHP fix needs to happen. So if you want to read the old comics, please go to gocomics.com. And so you can see the stream on twitch.tv/abusecartoons and also the YouTube channel for Abuse Cartoons. And of course, Idle Red Hands, if you'd like to get in touch with Idle Red Hands, the completely working website, idleredhands.com, and follow us on Twitter at Idle Red Hands. And if you'd like to get involved in the podcast, give us some suggestions, tell us what to do, see some drunken live streams and things that aren't available to the public, please visit patreon.com/idleredhands. So that's it for this week. We will talk at you again next week.
Bye.
Bye.